actually are deemed consecrated. They are deemed part of the mosque, and it is not actually permissible to lend them or to repurpose them for non-devotional uses, like using it as a restaurant or using it as a club for kids to come and play sports. Or any other. Some people might want to rent out that part of the mosque for a supermarket, to be used as a supermarket. So that's not allowed. Even it will generate some kind of money or revenue for the for the mosque.
Yes.
But it's not permissible to change or to repurpose the land or the ground or the floor of the mosque. None of the scholars, as far as I know, because it's a waqf property, and waqf property cannot be changed, cannot be repurposed at all, and it should remain. It should be used constantly and continuously for the very purpose for which it was endowed initially.
Is the formula pronounced for a masjid, for a mosque, in fact, limited to that area where everybody offers his prayer, or it also includes and incorporates the yard around it?
Well, it depends on the person who recites the formula and all the people, or maybe on the endower.
Yes.
Okay, the person who does waqf, we call them waqif, okay? So the waqif, the person who endows the land and consecrates it as a part of the mosque. So he can say, okay, this, for example, 100 meters, square meters, should be dedicated and exclusively used exclusively for as a mosque, and then the remaining part should be used as Husainiya, where people, ladies, might come in while they are not in the state of ritual impurity, ritual purity. So it depends on the intention of the donor or the endower.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah. Oh Allah, don't let me go astray, 'cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawheed Argi as the speaker. We are speaking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Tawheed, can we perform wudu or ghusl if we have something on our hair, like a spray, for example, hairspray, a kind of glue or other, you know, styling products, basically?
Right. Well, it depends on the hairspray.
Yes.
Whether it forms a barrier or not, whether it is a kind of glue. If it indeed is, glue is forms a barrier, and if it is, it sticks to the scalp or to the skin of your head, then that will definitely form an obstruction. It will not allow water to penetrate the through the hair and reach the skin. So for wudu and for ghusl to be valid, it's necessary to remove all the barrier. And of course, when if hair styling products, as you mentioned, are water impervious, that is, they do not allow water to pass through, and thus preventing water from reaching the hair, they must be removed before starting the wudu and ghusl. With regard to wuzu, of course, the area required for rubbing the head is very little, as even the least amount of rubbing, even if it is only an inch in length, is sufficient. So if there is such a minimal area of the upper part of the head that is clear of the water impervious substance, and there is no such substance there on that one very small space in front of your head, there's no problem, and it's not necessary to remove the substance, because there is small space left without the glue, without the hairspray, or without any barrier. So you can wipe over that part of your forehead, and that will be enough.
I see.
So also, instead of rubbing one's wet hand on the hair, one could actually part the hair in the middle.
Yes.
Okay, divide the hair in the middle.
Yes.
And rub the scalp, thus applying moisture directly to the skin. In which case, of course, one need not remove the water.
That substance in question.
I mean.
And should that parting actually be in the middle part of the skull?
Yeah, that's the front part.
Or it could be actually any part of the head.
It cannot be behind your head or the top of your head. It should be somewhere in front, the front part of your head.
Mm.
So anywhere in the front part of your head. If you can divide your hair and leave a space, a small, create a space where you can make water, the moisture reach the skin, that's enough.
I see. Thank you very much. Let's take another break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Welcome back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, with me, Mohammed Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still speaking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Javid, if we women, you know, or even men sometimes are wearing mascara, right?
Right.
You know, if we are wearing such a substance, do we need to wipe it off before performing the ablution of wudu or ghusl of any sort of these ritual cleansing? And if so, how well do we need to wipe it off? You know, does the color actually prevent the valid performance of ablution? I mean, that kind of color that remains under and around the eyes, even after thoroughly washing our mascara off, and that lacks any tangible substance.
Well, the color does not form a barrier. Sometimes you apply henna, for example, to your hands. The color remains there for 1 month, for 2 months.
Yes.
The color itself does not form any barrier. What makes, what creates actually a barrier is the substance.
Mm.
The substance. There should be no substance on your scalp or on your eyebrows and on your hands and the wuzu parts, generally speaking. Yes, the mascara might create that impediment, that barrier. Of course, it leaves a dark color there, right?
Yes.
But that color is not considered to be substance.
Mm-hmm.
So before making wudu, we need to remove the substances left, the substances which is there because of applying mascara to the eyebrows or maybe to the hair. So it depends. Maybe on the skin, it might, the substances might be left there. So it's necessary to make sure, it's necessary for someone who applies mascara to make sure that there's no substance on his or on her skin. before making wudu or before performing ghusl.
And obviously, if the mascara is made of natural stuff, then would it be actually water permeable or impermeable?
Again, it has to be decided by that very person himself. Because we cannot give a straightforward answer, right?
Right.
So there could be different types of mascara, and some of them could do so, could prevent water from reaching the skin. Some of them may not. Some of them may not. So in order for an individual to make sure he or she, and generally we should use she because ladies use mascara, she should check herself and see whether her water has reached her skin or not. Okay. Yes. If she is certain that water has reached or reaches the skin, so there's nothing she should do. That's okay.
Uh-huh.
The mascara, the color left does not form a barrier.
I see. On a very quick note, actually, I might mention something or add.
Yes.
Regarding the color, you said the color of the mascara is not that agent which, in fact, acts as a or functions as a barrier, right?
Right.
To the skin when you're making an ablution of wuzu or ghusl. But sometimes, you know, the color of
paint
actually is water impermeable. So obviously it creates a kind of barrier, and a person like a painter who's always working with the paint,
you're right?
They have to remove it before performing ablution.
Paint or oil.
Yes.
Okay.
Any
fat,
barriers.
Fat.
Yes.
There are substances on the skin,
yes,
and they form barrier.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Sheikh. That was Sheikh Javid explaining and answering my jurisprudential questions of miscellaneous nature based on fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei in the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. This is Muhammad Javad signing off.
About you. IRIB English Radio.
Have a very good time. This is Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. In 10th century Cordoba, an Umayyad Islamic dynasty city in Spain with over 70 libraries, the palace library alone had over 60,000 volumes, all written by hand. At the time, the best Latin library in Europe had only 600 parchment books. While the Chinese invested paper sometime before the 2nd century BC, Muslims were the first to mass-produce paper on an intercontinental scale, developing a culture dependent on its abundance. As the price of paper dropped, literacy rose and booksellers and libraries became integral parts of every Muslim city. Like Judaism and Christianity, Islam originated in the Middle East. And here's what's awaiting you on your radio station. Don't miss a beat. Up next is Let's Recite the Holy Quran. Mr. Habibullah Fasihzadeh will guide us. In this program, we teach eloquent recitation of the Quran at level 2. We also express tajweed points in the manner of confrontation or compare and match and apply them to the verses of the final surahs of the Holy Quran, a beautiful opportunity for reflection indeed. Then enjoy another segment from our radio productions. We've created a range of fascinating audio pieces for your listening pleasure. Coming up, we will have Let's Recite the Quran. Stay tuned.
Oh. Let's recite the Quran.
وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ جَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْآخِرَةِ حِجَابًا مَسْتُورًا
القرآن نور وبيان القرآن هدي الإيمان القرآن مسك الختام يا قرآن عليك سلام
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Welcome to this edition of Let's Recite the Quran. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and with me today in the studio, the usual brothers, Brother Ali, Hassan, Hussein, and Masoom. Welcome to you all, brothers, and welcome to this program, dear listeners. Insha'Allah, in this episode of Let's Recite the Quran, we will continue reciting the chapter number 71, Surah Nuh of the Noble Quran, from verse number 12. We finished up until verse number 11. Insha'Allah, from this episode onwards, we will be reciting from verse number 12 of Surah Nuh. I'll ask Brother Ali, without any further ado, to please recite verse number 12 for us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ويمددكم بأموال وبنين ويجعل لكم جنات ويجعل لكم أنهارا.
أحسنتم. A beautiful recitation. Keep in mind that with يمددكم, right? The second dal of يمددكم, which is ساكن, has a قلقلة sound. A قلقلة basically means that whenever we have قطب جات قاف طاء باء جيم and دال, any of these letters with سكون, we give an echoing sound to differentiate from one sound, one letter to the other, because they're very similar letters. They're pronounced very similarly when they have سكون. So when you're reciting, it shouldn't be ويمددكم, يمددكم, ويمددكم, right? And also at the end of يمددكم, can you tell me what ruling is applied for the meme of the last يمددكم, the last meme of يمددكم?
Yeah, I forgot this.
In your recitation.
Yes.
This is the
إخفاء
of meme. So we have the إخفاء of نون, whereby whenever نون ساكن or تنوين comes before a mouth letter, we silence the sound of the نون. And what do? We give it a غنّة. غنّة means a small nasal sound and a small stretch, two counts at max. However, in this case, it's the same ruling, but instead of noon, we have meme. It's less prevalent compared to noon, but then we still have quite a few cases with regards to this. Whenever we have meme followed by any of the mouth letters, what do? We give it a غنّة and silence the sound of meme. And keep in mind that when we're silencing the sound of meme, we are half opening the mouth when reciting meme. Remember, the makhraj, the way of pronouncing meme, is that you have to completely close your lips.
Yes.
But in this case, you keep it a little bit open, right? وَيُمْدِدُكُمْ بِأَمْوَالٍ وَبَنِينَ وَيَجْعَلْ لَكُمْ again, قَلْقَلَ جَنَّاتٍ. What kind of a ruling applied is applied over here?
We have idgham.
Idgham of noon and waw, correct? So idgham, yes, basically means merging of two letters. When the ruling says that whenever we have noon sakin or a tanween, and after that we have any of the yarmalun letters, ya, ra, mim, waw, lam, and noon, correct? Any of these letters, when they come after noon sakin or tanween, we merge it with the noon. Correct? And when we merge it with the noon, what happens? The noon loses its sound, and we basically kind of merge them. So it's in the word itself. Jannatin. Originally it was Jannatin wa yaj'al lahum lakum. Right? But after the idgham, it becomes Jannatin wa yaj'al lakum. And remember, this is idgham with ghunna. Where do we apply idgham with ghunna, Brother Ali?
When we have yamun letters.
Correct. So remember, we said that yarmanun letters, ya, ra, mim, lam, waw, and noon. Any of these letters, we apply I'm sorry, idgham for them. However, for two of those letters, we do not do ghunnah.
Yes.
So ra and lam, we avoid doing ghunnah. Yes. Now ghunnah basically means again a nasal sound and a small stretch.
جَنَّاتٍ وَيَجْعَلْ لَكُمْ أَنْهَارًا.
Right? And keep in mind, أَنْهَارًا, the ra is a ra of tafkhim at the end. Rounded mouth and a heavy sound.
وَيُمْدِدْكُمْ بِأَمْوَالٍ وَبَنِينَ وَيَجْعَلْ لَكُمْ جَنَّاتٍ وَيَجْعَلْ لَكُمْ أَنْهَارًا.
And give you increase in wealth and children, and provide for you gardens, and provide for you rivers.
Yes. I'll ask Brother Hassan to please recite verse number 13 for us. Brother Hassan, Bismillah.
مَا لَكُمْ لَا تَرْجُونَ لِلَّهِ وَقَارًا.
Ahsantum, a very beautiful recitation. تَرْجُونَ, تَرْجُونَ وَقَارًا. Right? Now, all of these recitations that I just had with you just now, tarjuna wa qara, all of them are tafkhim. The ra of tarjuna, it's not tarjuna, tar, the ra itself, the sukun ra, tarjuna, right? A rounded mouth and a heavy sound. Wa qara, not wa qara. You don't smile or flatten your mouth when reciting tafkhim. You round your mouth and give it a heavy sound. Wa qara, right? So that is verse number 13 of Surah Nuh.
مَا لَكُمْ لَا تَرْجُونَ لِلَّهِ وَقَارًا.
What is the matter with you that you do not attribute to Allah due grandeur?
I'll ask Brother Masoom to please recite verses number 14 and 15 because it's a very short verse, verse number 14. I'll ask you to recite both these verses first. Brother Masoom.
Yes.
وَقَدْ خَلَقَكُمْ أَطْوَارًا. أَلَمْ تَرَوْا كَيْفَ خَلَقَ اللَّهُ سَبْعَ سَمَاوَاتٍ طِبَاقًا.
Ahsantum, a very beautiful recitation. وَقَدَ, وَقَدَ. First of all, قَاف is a letter of تَفْخِيم. Rounded mouth and a heavy sound. دَال, we apply the rule of قَلْقَلَ over here, as we mentioned at the beginning of this episode. وَقَدَ, an echoing sound for دَال, correct? خَلَقَكُمْ, again, خَا and قَا. Not the lam and kaf. خَلَقَكُمْ. Now this is a very beautiful place to practice tafkhim and tarqiq, because in one word you can have both tafkhim and tarqiq. خَلَقَكُمْ. You see my mouth? خَلَقَكُمْ. You flatten your mouth for lam, and then you flatten for kaf, but then for kha and qa, you make it rounded and heavy. خَلَقَكُمْ أَطْوَارًا. Again, أَطْوَارًا, the ruling of قَلْقَلَ, the echoing sound of طَ. أَطْوَارًا, again, رَا is a تَفْخِيم. We apply تَفْخِيم in this case for رَا. أَلَمْ تَرَوْا, again, رَا, تَفْخِيم. كَيْفَ خَلَقَ, خَلَقَ, again, خَلَقَ. You see that? At the beginning and at the end, at the beginning and the end of the word, we have تَفْخِيم, and in the middle, we have تَرْقِيق. And this is just a three-letter word. خَلَقَ. خَلَقَ اللَّهُ. And then we reach the Allah, the word Allah. The word Allah, again, in this case, is تَفْخِيم. The lamb of Allah in the middle is تَفْخِيم. But there are cases where it becomes تَرْقِيق as well. That's why Ra and Lam, the lamb of Allah, they are not considered as the letters of تَفْخِيم. Rather, in situations, they have تَفْخِيم. In this case, we have tafkhim, Allah. Why do we have tafkhim in this case, Brother Masoom? Can you tell us?
Because the word after Allah, it has a fatha.
The word before Allah.
Yeah.
Correct? So the haraka before Allah is important. We look at the haraka. If it's fatha or dhamma, we make tafkhim of the lam of Allah. خَلَقَ اللَّهُ هُوَ اللَّهُ Astaghfirullah, Astaghfirullah, Dhamma, right? But then if there is Kasra before the Lam of Allah, the last Haraka before Allah is Kasra, we give Tarqiq. We flatten the recitation of Lam of Allah. Lillahi, لله ما في السماوات وما في الأرض. خلق الله in this case. سبعة again. سبعة. قلقلة. سماوات طباقا again. A very beautiful place to practice ترقيق التفخيم. At the beginning we have طا which is a letter of تفخيم and then قا again in the middle letter of تفخيم. But in the between we have با which is ترقيق. طباقا طباقا correct.
وَقَدْ خَلَقَكُمْ أَطْوَارًا.
While he has created you in stages.
أَلَمْ تَرَوْا كَيْفَ خَلَقَ اللَّهُ سَبْعَ سَمَاوَاتٍ طِبَاقًا.
Do you not consider how Allah has created seven heavens in layers?
I'll ask Brother Hussein to kindly recite the last verse of this episode, verse number 16 of Surah Nuh. Brother Hussein?
Yes.
وَجَعَلَ الْقَمَرَ فِيهِنَّ نُورًا وَجَعَلَ الشَّمْسَ سِرَاجًا.
أحسنتم. A very beautiful recitation. Again, at the beginning, القمر, قمر, قمر. Ra and Qaf are both تفخيم, but then ميم is ترقيق. وَجَعَلَ الْقَمَرَ قَمَرَ. And keep in mind, القمر is one of the حروف القمر. Qaf is a حروف القمر, meaning that the lam of al-qamar will be recited.
Yes.
Correct? It will not go silent, unlike for shamsi letters, for example, ash-shams. It is alif, lam, sheen, meem, and seen. Correct? In writing, ash-shams. Originally, it would have been al-shams. However, we drop the lam for shamsi letters, and then we give shadda on the first letter of the shamsi. Ash-shams, right? وَجَعَلَ الْقَمَرَ فِيهِنَّ. We do a غُنَّ on noon. Why is that so, Brother Hussein?
Yes.
Why do we do غُنَّ on the فِيهِنَّ, the noon of فِيهِنَّ?
Because here we have تَشْدِيد on noon.
Exactly. This is noon مُشَدَّة. It is a تَشْدِيد. So whenever we have noon with tashdeed, we give it a ghunna. Nooran waja'ala. What ruling is applied between the nooran waja'ala, Brother Hussein?
It's idgham.
Idgham. Originally, it would have been nooran waja'ala. But after the application of idgham, the correct recitation would be nooran waja'ala. Correct? وَجَعَلَ الشَّمْسَ سِرَاجًا. Look at this beauty of this verse. We have both Al-Qamar and Al-Shams in the same verse. وَجَعَلَ الْقَمَرَ. And then at the end of the verse, وَجَعَلَ الشَّمْسَ. Right? So it's a very good verse to practice the حروف القمر and حروف الشمس.
وَجَعَلَ الْقَمَرَ فِيهِنَّ نُورًا وَجَعَلَ الشَّمْسَ سِرَاجًا.
And made the moon therein a reflected light. And made the sun a burning lamp.
I think we started from verse number 12 in this episode, correct? Let's recite and repeat these verses together once again.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ويمددكم بأموال وبنين ويجعل لكم جنات ويجعل لكم أنهارا.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ويمددكم بأموال وبنين ويجعل لكم جنات ويجعل لكم أنهارا.
ما لكم لا ترجون لله وقارا.
ما لكم لا ترجون لله وقارا.
وقد خلقكم أطوارا.
وقد خلقكم أطوارا.
ألم تروا كيف خلق الله سبع سماوات طباقا.
ألم تروا كيف خلق الله سبع سماوات طباقا
وجعل القمر فيهن نورا وجعل الشمس سراجا
وجعل القمر فيهن نورا وجعل الشمس سراجا
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
And verse number 16 of this chapter, chapter Nuh, concludes this episode of Let's Recite the Quran. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Let's Recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Searching for the light, and you see no hope in sight. Be sure and have no doubt, He is always close to you. He's the one who knows you best, He knows what's in your heart. You'll find your peace at last if you just have faith in Him.
You're always in my heart and mind. Your name is mentioned every day. You no matter what, my biggest wish is to see you one day. 'Cause I believe.
that was the week that was.
Beyond the headlines, we dissect the stories that shaped the past 7 days from the heart of region to the global stage. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to our political chat show, That Was the Week That Was. We look at global politics and issues of the day, and I'm your host, Leila Garcia. With me here in the studio is veteran journalist and political commentator, Miranda Akhshand. Please stay tuned. Maron, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much indeed.
Today's discussion is about a new survey which has found half of Europeans see Donald Trump as enemy of Europe. A new survey has found that nearly half of Europeans see Donald Trump as an enemy of Europe. Rather, moreover, the risk of war with Russia has high, and more than two-thirds believe their country would not be able to defend itself in the event of such a war. The nine-country poll from the Paris-based European Affairs Debt Platform, the Grand Continent, also found that nearly three-quarters of respondents wanted their country to stay in the EU, with almost as many saying leaving the Union had harmed the UK. Jean-Yves Dormagen, a political science professor and founder of the polling agency Cluster 17, said Europe is not only facing growing risk, it is also undergoing a transformation of its historical, geopolitical, and political environment. The overall picture of the survey shows Europe that is anxious, that is deeply aware of its vulnerabilities, and that is struggling to project itself positively into the future. Okay, let's bring in veteran journalist and political commentator Meron Derakhshand.
Thanks for inviting me.
My first question is, the survey has also found a relative majority, 51%, felt the risk of open war with Russia in the coming years was high. Tell us more about that.
Yes, this survey was actually conducted in nine European countries, namely France, Italy, Spain, Germany, Poland, Portugal, Croatia, Belgium, and the Netherlands. And a majority, or a slight majority, about 51%, felt the risk of open war with Russia in the coming years was high. And 18% considered the risk of war with Russia as very high. So views varied strongly according to proximity to Russia. For example, 77% of respondents in Poland considered the risk of war with Russia to be high. And 54% of the French public considered the risk to be high. 51% in Germany. 39% of the public in Portugal thought the risk of war with Russia was high. Portugal is much further away than Poland, for example. And 34% in Italy felt that way.
Right.
The survey showed that the possibility of direct conflict on the European continent is now widely accepted by the European public.
But the survey also found that confidence in national military capabilities was low everywhere. Can you explain that for us?
Yes, confidence in national military capabilities was low. Mm-hmm. And the survey found with 69% of respondents across the nine European countries said they thought their country was not really or not at all capable of defending itself against Russia.
Right.
French respondents were the most confident, but it remained a minority opinion at 44%.
Mm-hmm.
In Poland, for example, which shares a border with Russia, 58% were not confident. And political science professor and founder of the polling agency, Jean-Yves Dormagen, said, "We're entering an age of danger while feeling a persistent sense of national weakness."
Right.
Feelings of vulnerability were widely shared, according to the survey, with only 12% of respondents saying they did not feel particularly threatened by a raft of sources of insecurity, ranging from technological and military insecurity to energy and to food.
Yeah. The vast majority of respondents across the nine European countries in the survey backed EU membership. Tell us more about that.
Yes, you're right. The vast majority of those who replied in the nine countries supported European Union membership. 74% of the European public said they wanted their country to remain in the European bloc.
Yeah.
With this sentiment being highest in Portugal, 90% of the public in Portugal said they wanted their country to remain within the European Union. In Spain, 89% of the public said they wanted Spain to remain in the European Union. The second lowest was in Poland with 68%, and the lowest was actually in France.
Right.
With 61% of the French public saying they wanted France to remain within the EU.
Mm-hmm. What did the survey say about Brexit, the UK's decision to leave the European Union?
Yes, well, that's another point in the survey. Britain's decision to leave the European Union is widely seen in Europe as a failure. 63% of the European public believe Brexit had actually had a negative impact on Britain, and only 19% thought it had been positive, and just 5% thought Brexit had been very positive.
Mm-hmm.
So the vast majority, 63% of the European public, thought Brexit, Britain's decision to leave the European Union, had a negative impact on Britain.
Right. Donald Trump has admitted that the path to peace in Ukraine is unclear. What is the latest on peace negotiation between U.S. and Russia and U.S. and Ukraine?
Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, accompanied by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, spent nearly 5 hours in talks with President Vladimir Putin at the Kremlin on Tuesday, 2nd of December.
Mm-hmm.
Moscow later said the meeting had not brought the sides any closer to a peace agreement. But Donald Trump on Wednesday, 3rd of December, described the discussions in Moscow as reasonably good, though he acknowledged that the path ahead for peace in Ukraine remained unclear.
Right.
Speaking to reporters in the Oval Office on Wednesday, 3rd of December, Trump said Putin would like to make a deal,
mm-hmm.
but what comes out of that meeting, I can't tell you because it takes two to tango.
I see.
And President Trump said the U.S. had something pretty well worked out with Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has ruled out giving up territory Ukraine currently holds. And on Wednesday, he said his team was preparing for meetings in the U.S., adding that dialogue with Trump's representatives would continue.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the latest on the peace efforts between U.S. and Russia and
right.
U.S. and Ukraine.
Yeah, I see. There is some anxiety and mistrust among European leaders over Washington's role in the peace negotiation with Russia. Tell us more about that.
Yes, this is a leaked transcript of a high-level call published by the German magazine Der Spiegel.
Mm-hmm.
And it has exposed deep anxiety among European leaders over Washington's role in the peace negotiations with Moscow. The call, held on Monday, 1st of December, included the French President Emmanuel Macron, Germany's Chancellor Friedrich Merz, NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, and Finland's President Alexander Stubb,
right.
as well as Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine and various other leaders and politicians.
Mm-hmm.
According to the transcript, several participants voiced fears that the United States could abandon Ukraine at a critical moment.
Yeah.
For example, the French President Emmanuel Macron said, "There is a possibility that the United States will betray Ukraine on the issue of territory without providing clarity on security guarantees."
Mm-hmm.
And Macron warned of a great danger for Volodymyr Zelensky if Kiev were left exposed. Now, the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz urged Zelensky to be extremely careful in the coming days. Merz said, "They are playing games both with you and with us." He was apparently referring to Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner,
yeah.
whom Friedrich Merz said they were playing games with both mm-hmm. Zelensky and with the Europeans.
Right.
And Finland's president, Alexander Stubb, appeared to back Friedrich Merz's assessment. So the Finnish president, Alexander Stubb, said, "We cannot leave Ukraine and Volodymyr Zelensky alone with these guys."
Mm-hmm.
So with these guys, he meant Steve Witkoff, President Trump's special envoy, and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. He said, "We can't leave Ukraine and Volodymyr Zelensky alone with these guys. Presumably, I think he meant Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner.
Yeah, right.
Now, on Wednesday, the European Commission announced it would move ahead with controversial plans to fund Ukraine with a loan based on Russia's frozen assets.
Mm-hmm.
This is completely illegal and goes against international laws and protocols. In a concession to concerns raised by Belgium, Belgium is the host of most of these Russian assets. The European Union executive has also proposed the option of an EU loan based on common borrowing. EU leaders will be asked to decide on the options later this month as Ukraine faces a funding emergency now. Russia's Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev has unequivocally stated that if the European Commission's plan to fund Ukraine with Russia's frozen assets is in effect a declaration of war on Russia.
I see. Listening to the Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran, English Radio. This program entitled, That Was the Week That Was. Foreign Policy Chief Kaya Kallas has said the fierce talks between the Russian President Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff will pile pressure on Ukraine to make concessions. What is that about?
Yes, the European Union Foreign Policy Chief Kaya Kallas, referring to Steve Witkoff, Vladimir Putin meeting, said, I'm afraid that all the pressure will be put on Ukraine to make concessions and obligations.
Yeah.
Whereas in order to have peace, she said, we shouldn't lose focus that it was actually Russia who started this war. Mm-hmm. Now, European leaders have been alarmed by a U.S. plan, which they say is heavily tilted in Russia's favor, that emerged last month in November to end the war between Russia and Ukraine. The plan granted Moscow territories in eastern Ukraine it did not yet control, while forcing Kiev to cap the size of its army and abandon its ambition to join NATO.
Right.
The plan has since been changed, of course, but Ukraine's European allies remain concerned about any peace plan that could enshrine the forced change of Ukraine's borders. So EU Foreign Policy Chief Kaya Kallas also said, the push to end the war in Ukraine could be entering a pivotal week, warning that allowing Russia to change borders by force would set a dangerous precedent for the entire world. Now, earlier, Kallas described weekend talks in Florida, United States, between U.S. and Ukraine as difficult but productive. She was asked whether she trusted the United States to find a good solution for peace in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And Kallas said, Ukrainians are there alone, meaning they're alone in Florida.
Yeah.
If they would be together with the Europeans, they would definitely be much stronger. But I trust that Ukrainians can stand up for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is under pressure after the sudden resignation of his head of cabinet and one of his closest advisors, Andrei Yermak, in response to a widening anti-corruption investigation that has become the most serious scandal in Volodymyr Zelensky's presidency. So Andrew Yermak has actually stepped down now. He was one of the closest advisors to Zelensky. He was also the head of the cabinet. He has resigned from his position. And also a new study has shown that Russia has made the biggest advances in Ukraine in November of 2025, just last month. The Russian army has captured 701 square kilometers of land, the second largest territorial advance in the war after November of 2024, according to a new analysis.
To sum up very briefly then, the European public sees Donald Trump as the enemy of Europe, and European politicians are very anxious and worried that the Trump administration might betray Ukraine in the peace negotiation with Russia. Thank you, Mr. Dashen, for your insightful analysis.
Thank you very much.
For more on these and other critical issues, be sure to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. And that brings us to the end of today's program. Join us again next time for another edition of That Was the Week That Was. Take care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio. Let's quickly navigate what's coming up next. We're excited to present these programs, so please stay with us. Time to delve into economic divide. If you are interested in economic or business issues, then this program is definitely for you. Top experts on the economy give expert analysis and commentary on the biggest business and economic stories of the day. Mind-provoking insights into the economic issues. Then it's time to listen to Spring of Truth. This program features English translations of selected powerful statements and speeches from the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul. What's next up? We are featuring a collection of our finest radio productions. These are specially curated segments designed to entertain, educate, and inform you, dear listeners. So keep us company. Up next is Economic Divide.
Economic Divide.
The biggest economy in the world is not as big as it claimed to be, and it's not as resilient as everyone thought it was. Its warmongering foreign policy, along with the other warmongering policies of trade and tariff war, has taken a toll on its economy. Negative economic indicators point towards a slippery slope economic landscape. Hi, I'm Keresh Bunamati. This is The Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, U.S. Economic Crisis 2025. Is the U.S. experiencing an economic crisis? That depends on who you talk to or what you read. We have concluded that it is, and we'll tell you why. Trump's economy is backfiring. Why is the U.S. president claiming the U.S. economy is doing well when many indicators point to it not doing well, like consumer purchasing power and inflation? Our third headline, recession fears, and things are about to get worse since there are fears of an economic recession. Amid instability and fear in Trump's economy, Americans are cutting back. We're going to be discussing those points and a whole lot more with Scotty Nell Hughes, journalist, political commentator and host, and also Garden Nixon, political analyst and radio talk show host.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It was a great discussion. The current United States economy is really a reflection of what is going on across the globe right now. I don't think that the United States is headed into a recession. I think we were probably already in one, and this has been in effect for probably a result of what was going on during the Biden administration and the economic policies post-COVID. There is an issue with going on with President Trump and his tariffs, and it has allowed for a readjustment of the trade imbalance that had existed for previous administrations, not only with the previous one, but obviously several presidents in the past. And so President Trump has had to come in a very dramatic way and try to reestablish and rebalance the trade deficit, which had been occurring between the United States and so-called countries that were our allies and so-called countries that had been taking advantage, as the Americans feel like, of our economy and of our manufacturing system and our consumers for several decades now. Currently, though, I do believe that we are suffering through a recession, as you are seeing not only an inflation happening of prices, despite what the president is talking about, but this is also a reflection of what we're seeing in multiple countries around the globe. And as they say, the world, it is a small country after it is a small world after all. And so what we're seeing is basically a reflection of what the various instabilities of economies in countries across the globe, not only here, just in the United States.
One reason that the U.S. economy is not doing well is its consumer confidence. Here is a chart showing just that. Change from October registered at -6.8 and from November 2024 last year, a whopping -24.1. The Consumer Confidence Index here shows the trend from 2020 onwards. It is pretty evident that this trend has been going down from a high in 2020 to where it is standing right now. Welcome back. This is the social section of the program. The first item that we've picked for you is the share of the population living in extreme poverty is now higher in the United States than in China. Take a special look at the share of the population that lives under $3 a day. China's poverty rate has declined while the U.S. trend has stagnated. The U.S. is going full speed towards a debt crisis. Interest rates are high, the dollar is weakening, and bond yields are skyrocketing. This is going to be disastrous for the families. 2025 is hitting Americans hard. More than 2.2 million cars repoed, heading toward a 3 million record year. 326,000 homes in foreclosure.